Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Was the revelation that lifted the priesthood ban really a revelation? Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. Now, that opening line sounded a little bit confusing even after I said it.
And a lot of Latter-day Saints are scratching their heads because they know it as the Black Revelation.
The Black Revelation or the Priesthood Revelation. You're right. And we've used that term here only because that's the way it's understood.
Mm-hmm.
But really, what took place behind closed doors that eventually led to all worthy male members, regardless of heritage, regardless of color, to hold the priesthood? The reason we're talking about this and taking a break from our series on Emma Hale Smith is because this Saturday is the 35th anniversary where the Mormon Church reversed its long-standing tradition that blacks could not hold the priesthood. And of course, for many, that was a great day in the Mormon Church. To some actually said it reminded them, made them feel more like the bombing of Pearl Harbor, which obviously they didn't have a very positive outlook on this. But today we want to look at an interview that was given by LeGrand Richards, a Mormon apostle. On the 16th of August, 1978, Wesley Walters and Chris Vlachos were able to interview LeGrand Richards and asked him, how did this come about? Now remember, this is the 16th of August. We're 2 months after the priesthood ban was lifted by the Mormon Church.
And that would be your dream, to be able to go to the church administration building and go talk to some of the general authorities. They had a chance to do it. How they did it, I'm not quite sure. But wow, this is a great interview.
Now, we want to tell you that Chris Vlachos was a professor at Salt Lake Seminary.
He was.
I believe maybe even at this time he was too. But now he's teaching back east from what we understand.
He's in Wheaton now.
Okay. And then Wes Walters, the late Wes Walters, he was responsible for finding the evidence that showed that there was no revival in 1820 that Joseph Smith states took place that caused him to go and pray as to which church was true. Wes Walters was the one who found out that all the evidence of the revival that Joseph Smith talks about points to 1824, not 1820. And of course, the Mormon Church can't change the date to 1824 because then Moroni showing up in 1823 really becomes the first vision. That's a whole nother set of radio shows that some of which we've done in the past. But anyway, we're going to look at what took place in this interview, and I'm going to be Wes Walters. Eric is going to be LeGrand Richards. So we're just going to go and we're going to read it. Now, this is transcribed from an actual cassette recording. So we have to believe this is what was actually said.
And like I said yesterday with yesterday's letter, we're going to go ahead and put this link on the front page. It will be in an article on the Curse of Cain. Go in there at the very top. We'll have links to both of those so you can look at this for yourself.
Wes Walters said to LeGrand Richards, "On this revelation of the priesthood to the Negro, I've heard all kinds of stories. I've heard that Joseph Smith appeared, and then I heard another story that Spencer Kimball had a concern about this for some time and simply shared it with the apostles, and they decided that this was the right time to move in that direction. Are any of those stories true, or are they all?"
And Richards responds, "Well, the last one is pretty true, and I might tell you what provoked it in a way. Down in Brazil, there is so much Negro blood in the population there that it's hard to get the leaders that don't have Negro blood in them. We just built a temple down there. It's going to be dedicated in October. All those people with Negro blood in them have been raising the money to build that temple. If we don't change, then they can't even use it. Well, Brother Kimball worried about it, and he prayed a lot about it."
So they knew they were going to be running into some trouble when the Sao Paulo, Brazil temple was eventually going to be dedicated and open.
And we need to point out that that was talked about and actually made official in 1975 that they were going to build that temple is when they started to build it. And we've speculated privately, you and I, Bill, that that could not have happened before 1973 because the 10th president, Joseph Fielding Smith, and the 11th president, Harold B. Lee, would never have gone for this. But after they died, kind of the old school almost went away. And so now there was going to be more openness. Otherwise, why would you have ever decided to build a temple in a place that would never have had most of the people inside, the opportunity to be able to go inside?
And when you do look at some of the teachings of Joseph Fielding Smith and Harold B. Lee, both of them were very, very critical about the blacks and the pre-existence and things like that. So it probably was kind of doubtful that those two men would have gone along with this, and perhaps they did. They waited until those two were out of the way, and now they can move forward with this decision. But they do know they're going to be running into problems when it comes to the Sao Paulo, Brazil temple.
Because everybody in Brazil has some kind of black blood, as he's talking about. So
it was another one of the hubs of the slave trade, just like the United States was at one time. So anyway, go on with Richard's response.
He says he asked each one of us of the 12 if we would pray, and we did, that the Lord would give him the inspiration to know what the will of the Lord was. Then he invited each one of us in his office individually because, you know, when you are in a group, you can't always express everything that's in your heart. You're part of the group, you see. So he interviewed each of us personally to see how we felt about it, and he asked us to pray about it. Then he asked each one of us to hand in all the references we had for or against that proposal. See, he was thinking favorably toward giving the colored people the priesthood. Then we had a meeting where we meet every week in the temple, and we discussed it in a group together, and then we prayed about it in our prayer circle, and then we held another prayer circle after the close of that meeting. And he, President Kimball, led in the prayer, praying that the Lord would give us the inspiration that we needed to do the thing that we would be pleasing to him and for the blessing of his children. And then the next Thursday, we meet every Thursday, the presidency came with this little document written out to make the announcement to see how we'd feel about it and present it in written form. Well, some of the members of the 12 suggested a few changes in the announcement. And then in our meeting, there we all voted in favor of it, the 12 and the presidency. One member of the 12, Mark Peterson, was down in South America, but Brother Benson, our president, had arranged to know where he could be reached by phone. And right while we were in that meeting in the temple, Brother Kimball talked with Brother Peterson and read him this article, and he, Peterson, approved it.
And that kind of surprised me because Peterson was known for that infamous 1954 speech, I think it was 54, Race Problems as They Affect the Church. Mm-hmm. And again, if you want to read a speech that would just make you cringe, read that one.
I'll put that in the list there, too, on that article.
We could do that. But I want to bring out that it was talking about approving an announcement and to see how we feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sensing any real revelation in the traditional sense of the word, even in a Mormon context at this point. After LeGrand Richards says all that, Wes Walters then says, well, what was the date? What would that have been, the 1st of June or something?
And Richard says that was the first Thursday, I think in May.
And then in brackets, they say June with a question mark. Maybe he got it wrong.
Well, Richard didn't say June, but it was June 1st was a Thursday. And it couldn't have been in May. They would not have waited 5 weeks to have made this announcement. This is happening very quickly.
Right.
So 1st of June, at least he says that's about when it was. And then after we all voted in favor of it, we called another meeting for the next morning, Friday morning at 7 o'clock, of all the other general authorities. That includes the 70s quorum and the patriarch and the presiding bishop. And it was presented to them. And there were a few of the brethren that were out presiding then in the missions. And so the 12 were appointed to interview each one of them.
Notice again, they're being presented with this announcement and to vote in favor of it. To vote in favor of it. It's not a revelation in the traditional sense of the word. And again, even in a Mormon context, this is not what we're getting here. They're making this corporate decision, and that is important. That is important. So Walters goes on to says, now, when President Kimball read this little announcement or paper, was that the same thing that was released to the press?
Richard says, yes.
To which Walters says, there wasn't a special document as a quote-unquote revelation that he had and wrote down.
And see, he's seeing the same thing that we're seeing, mm-hmm. and he saw it right there. Wait a minute here, because the word on the street was mixed, and there were some saying revelation and some were policy change. And
well, yeah, you would think that if anything, President Kimball came to us with a revelation that God gave him, mm-hmm. and we were to decide on that, to go forward with that. But that's not the way it's worded. It's not the way it's worded.
And Wesley Walters is deceased today, but I'm sure in his mind when he asked that, he was kind of surprised, because I think he probably was expecting a revelation came, and then they voted on it. That would be one thing, but that's not what he's saying here. Richard says, we discussed it in our meeting. What else should we say besides that announcement? And we decided that was sufficient, that no more needed to be said.
To that, Walter said, was that the letter you sent out to the various wards?
Richard says, and to the church, and to the newspapers, yes.
Now, Chris Vlachos chimes in here where he says, will that become a part of Scripture?
And Richard says, yes, I've already thought in my own mind of suggesting we add it to the Pearl of Great Price, just like those last two revelations that we just added.
Now, that we should comment on, the last two revelations that he's referring to is section 137 and section 138. They are at the back of the Doctrine and Covenants.
They were just put in 2 years previously to this interview.
Correct. But that's not what happened. If you look at the Doctrine and Covenants, the revelations end with 138. There is no 139, which you would think, according to what LeGrand Richards has just said, about adding it just like those last two revelations that we've just added, it should have been Revelation 139. But it's not. It's Declaration 2. It's set apart separately from the rest of the revelations. Just like Declaration 1 is not a revelation. It's a press release that was supposedly announcing the prohibition of polygamy. Declaration 2 is almost like a press release announcing that no longer will those of African heritage be banned from holding the priesthood. This is critical. This is critical in our understanding of this. LeGrand Richards is not giving us the impression that Declaration 2 was really born out of some revelation that was given to Spencer Kimball that came from God reversing this situation that they had experienced for most of its history.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Let me ask you this. Have you ever wondered how to answer questions you were asked by your LDS friend? Well, a new resource by Kriegel Publishers and written by MRM's Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson is exactly what you need. Answering Mormons Questions is a 300-page book covering 36 common questions that Mormons often pose. Now you'll have the ability to respond to them with sound biblical reasoning. The book includes a glossary of common LDS terms and has study questions at the end of each chapter. Questions such as, wouldn't you like to have your marriage and family endure for all eternity? And what's wrong with praying about the Book of Mormon are dealt with in a straightforward but loving manner. Available at the Utah Lighthouse Bookstore, 1358 West Temple in Salt Lake City. Or if you prefer, you can order online at mrm.org. That's mrm.org. Answering Mormons Questions. It's a resource every Christian needs.